My name is Daryl Chastain, and I'm going to tell you about some things that happen as a cotton leaf expands and how these interact under drought. So, whenever I say young leaves and mature leaves, this would be your young leaf. If you're looking down on a cotton plant, it's about a quarter to one-sixth the size of the more mature leaf here. So these young leaves typically have lower stomatoconductance to water vapor. They have a higher leaf temperature. Photosystem 2 is almost always more thermotolerant. Handle temperatures up to about 45, maybe 50 in some cases. And the potential causes, maybe we have data to show that lipid bilayers are more saturated and more stable under high temperatures. There's also some evidence for heat shock proteins, and most of this work has been done under well-watered conditions. No one's really done it under drought before. These high temperatures may only be relevant under drought because you don't really see anything over 35 until you have drought conditions. If you'd like to see some of the gene expression work on this project, poster number 14 in the Cotton Agronomy and Physiology section has some FAD gene work for Pima and upland cotton. So this is not limited just to Gossypium or Pseudom. It shows up in trees. It shows up pretty much every plant. So most of the previous work has been done on upland cotton, most of my research. Early in the season, younger leaves are typically more thermotolerant as measured by chlorophyll fluorescence. It's very heavily reliant on chlorophyll fluorescence at this point. So in this graph, this is actual quantum yield of electron transport through photosystem 2 in response to leaf temperature. More mature leaves here, the N4 and the N5 leaves tend to cut out at about 35 and start to decline from their individual optima. Young leaves extend out to 40, and this always happens. It always seems to show up in the early season. Later in the season, it'll either disappear or you'll have a flip-flop to where the more mature leaves are more thermotolerant. Again, heavily reliant on chlorophyll fluorescence, little to no gas exchange data, and to my knowledge, never been done in drought. So how does this affect, or how does this contribute tolerance to drought? Our main objective is to investigate the effect of drought-induced leaf temperature extremes on carbon assimilation in both young and fully expanded leaves. And we hypothesize that young leaves are going to be more photosynthetically tolerant under drought based on our Photosystem 2 data that we've seen before. We chose Stripling Irrigation Research Park here in southern Georgia. Two cultivars, Fibermax 1944 and Phytogen 499. Grown under strip till with a 12-inch deep subsurface strip irrigated plot, organized in a randomized complete block with a little N of 4 for each cultivar. We have five irrigation treatments. The typical Georgia checkbook irrigation treatment where we try to balance rainfall with the amount of water for each physiological stage, here shown on your right. And we have three plant-based irrigation triggers. We go in 3 days a week at 4 o'clock in the morning, measure leaf water potential in every single plot. And then if we hit one of these triggers here in the bottom, 0.7, 0.5, and 0.9 megapascals, we irrigate with one-third of the amount of checkbook. So it's following along with, it's a modified checkbook. And also a dry land with little, no supplemental irrigation beyond establishment. Our method generated a wide range of leaf water potentials using a pressure bomb. Three times during the year, we came out and we took leaf samples. We did our physiological measurements. We brought them back to the field. I brought them back to the lab, dark adapted them, and did OGIP analysis as we moved from 30 degrees C to 50 degrees C on this massive 1,000-pound thermal gradient table that the peanut people loaned us. We took this data, plotted our calculated FEFM, and plotted it against leaf temperature for mature and young leaves for every single leaf that we sampled. That's 80 leaves per sample date. Then within each curve, we would find the 15% decline from the optimum. Here's the optimum here. This unfilled circle would be our 15% decline. We call that the T15. That's our measure of drought tolerance, our heat tolerance, rather. All of these days that we went out and collected our samples, we pretty much measured every single thing we could possibly measure with the equipment we had. I'm going to present net photosynthesis data today, but we have pretty much everything along with simultaneous gas exchange and fluorescence measurements pre-dawn and midday for all of these days. And midday water potential, again, we measured it all. So a few cultivar effects popped out, but nothing was, the trends were always the same. They differed in magnitude, maybe by a small amount. For the sake of this presentation, I'm going to just present pooled data for you. So here's the massive pre-dawn water potential graph. Each of these curves represents one of our five treatments, with this blue curve here being the dry land sample, the black curve here being the 100% checkbook, and they just stair step throughout the entire season. Our sample dates were roughly here, here, and here for our physiological measurements. So midday water potential. The black bars are July 10th. That's the first sample date. Everything was essentially well watered at this point. They were all about the same. The next date, July 26th, the red bars. Sorry for the red-green colorblind people, but the red bars, which is the second bar, separates out into two groups. You have one group here and then one group here with these treatments. Later on in the season, the stress gets more severe. Leaf temperature. So there's a very strong relationship with midday water potential. This is just raw data thrown into a table. No means, no nothing like that. We get really, really high relationships with leaf water potential for mature leaves in this graph and young leaves for this graph here. Leaf temperatures separate out by age class really well early in the season when everything is well watered, like we've seen in other studies. So young leaves, very warm. Later on in the growing season, as drought starts to progress, those more mature leaf temperatures start to rise, and you start to have a separation out to where those two groups that were essentially well watered during this state are lower, are separating out like normal, but the higher water potentials start to converge on each other. Later in the season, it gets more severe. So our measure of thermotolerance, T15. In the well-watered groups alone throughout the entire season, we see what we typically see. You have young leaves that are more thermotolerant, mature leaves that are not. Typically, it'll go away during the season. We didn't see that this year, and I'm not sure exactly what is happening there. But separated out by each individual treatment, T15 is always higher under well-water conditions early on. That seemed to be pretty normal. As drought progressed, we started to lose it, like we see in other studies. I mean, we've watched the thermotolerance drop away. Now, later on in the growing season, it came back. I'm at a loss. I can't tell you. Maybe these leaves might be more mature. I'm not really sure what's happening. But just the thought of a leaf that's tolerant at 50 degrees C, I think that's relevant. It's interesting. Now, back to our question about how does this relate to photosynthetic drought tolerance. So net photosynthesis here and leaf temperature here. Early in the growing season, this is the first sample date. No relationship over 0.5 could be found for either age class. As the drought progressed and these more mature leaves started to increase in temperature, net photosynthesis dropped out to where they were equal to the mature, or equal to these young leaves. I find that very interesting. People have asked me, why do I like to study these young leaves? They may not be net contributors, but I would argue under drought conditions, they are important. As the season progressed, this gets more and more severe. I realize these axes here are switched, but they should be the other way around. But these lower conductance values are what's contributing to these higher leaf temperatures, like we've seen in other studies. So back to my original question, what is the effect of drought-induced leaf temperature extremes on carbon assimilation in both young and expanded leaves? So sort of the me too of this study. Yeah, we have warmer, younger leaves with lower conductance. Photosystem 2 is more thermotolerant. And we did see an early versus late season response, even though we saw something new this time. But now, for the first time, we do show that net photosynthesis is more thermotolerant. That graph, we had a never could pull out a relationship. Young leaves always tended to be about the same sort of buckshot area in the graph. But under drought, thermotolerance gets a little more interesting, and it's hard to explain. These young leaves seem to handle it just fine, but the mature leaves seem to be able to compensate sometimes. And as mature leaf temperature increases, net photosynthesis decreases along with it, making it towards equal to these younger leaves, or less. So my current research, we're taking this study. I told you we measured everything we can possibly measure. That's sort of our strategy. We've demonstrated that we can save water in a wet or a dry year. This graph here, it says kilograms per hectare. It should be pounds per acre. I apparently didn't change it. But this year here is 2013 in a nice wet year. Our same samples, so we've done this scheduling project over 2 years. In a wet year, we can still save water, increase water use efficiency in these lower triggers without taking a yield penalty here. If you notice, all these yields are the same. This year, really dry year, great year for drought research in southern Georgia. We can cause a stair step in yield from 2,000 down to 1,000 pounds per acre, which is interesting. And if you want to see this whole project, it's poster number 2 in the agronomy and physiology section. We also have continuous crop canopy temperature data using smart crop sensors for the entire year for both studies and every plot. So again, everything, whatever we could throw at it. We were going to try to modify the crop water stress index. It worked really well in 2003 in the wet year. Somehow we've modeled a crop that's not physiologically possible for this year, and we're searching for collaboration and a modification of our model to include other parameters. So if you're interested, email me. University of Georgia, I'd like to acknowledge the University of Georgia, Georgia Cotton Commission, Cotton Incorporated, Dr. John Snyder, Guy Collins, Philip Roberts, Mark Van Ursel, Derek Oosterhaus, my cotton physiology lab, this motley crew here, as well as Jared Whitaker, Calvin Perry, BJ Washington, and Ivy Greiner. And with that, I'll take any questions. Here's my email at the bottom if you have any suggestions for me. Yeah, could you restate your question?
Were there differences in the pre-dawn water potential between the small leaf and the mature leaf?
There wouldn't be. You can't get the small leaf in the leaf chamber. So these are based on the large leaf water potentials. So it's just our measure of plant water status is what we're going for at the time. And I realize there may be higher and lower between the two, but it's our measure of plant water status. If the pre-dawn water potential, the relationships are actually a lot tighter, but people tend to be really resistant to accept the pre-dawn water potential data. You know, I'm sure you've heard the arguments. Yeah. Particularly in the thermotolerance data, the other physiological data never separates out by cultivar. During one sample date, the thermotolerance, it's the second sample date, the thermotolerance in treatment 3 dropped by maybe 10% in both age classes, threw the model out. So we just pulled it for the sake of this presentation. Yeah.